You're listening to the One of Us.net Podcast Network.
Something's coming.
Stand by.
Hold on to your hats, here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 144. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is BJ Colangelo.
Oh, hi.
Also with me is, with us, is Stephanie Crawford. Stephanie, welcome back.
Thank you. Hey.
And no Brad.
Brad is on his way to Fantastic Fest. So he opted out of this episode, because otherwise he'd be running on, like, 2 to 3 hours worth of sleep, and I'm told that that's not a good way to start a film festival.
Correct.
Awesome. Well, today we are going to be talking about Arrow Video's release of The Slayer. We'll also be discussing a Shudder exclusive, Among the Living, and then we'll be jumping into our VHS Oh My God segment and talking about Backwoods from 1987.
Yeah.
But first, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
So, Stephanie, we can start with you. What have you been watching?
A few days ago, I watched a movie that came out in 2015 called Intruders. It was on Showtime. I had never heard a thing about this before going in, but it looked interesting. And it was. It's about agoraphobic who is the victim of a home invasion. And it has some pretty interesting twists. The acting's really solid. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's quiet, but it's definitely worth your time. And another one recently. It's a Korean sci-fi anthology film called Doomsday Book. Came out a few years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, one of the filmmakers made I Saw the Devil.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that.
And yeah, this one blew me away. I literally was at Fry's. I saw it for $3. I'm like, yeah, I'll try that for $3. So it's three different stories. The first one, it's kind of a zombie virus story, but it's like one of the most gorgeous, funny, and heartwarming. You know, everyone's getting disgustingly infected stories on film I've seen. And the second one, it's that's more of where the sci-fi comes in. It's basically Buddhists and robots. That's kind of all I can say about it. It's gorgeous, though. And the next one, it's like kind of a post-apocalyptic story based around a family. And that one, it's more goofy, but the family itself, they're so charming. And they're so funny. And altogether, it's probably one of my new favorite anthology films. And I grabbed it for $3 randomly. So, if you ever want to try something for a few bucks, I always recommend doing that, because you never know what you'll find.
That's awesome.
I know this was on Netflix for a while. I'm not sure if it's still there. But when it first came out, I think they released it on, it was put on to Netflix for a while. So,
yeah, it's definitely worth it. It's gorgeously made. A lot of love was put into it. But it's also a lot of fun. And I saw this obscure little indie movie called It. It's based on a literary work. I think it has legs, though. It is a lot of fun. I enjoyed the actors, the child actors, most of all. But no, I thought it was, you know, I have a few hang-ups, but overall I really enjoyed it. But I'm excited to hear what you guys think. Because I'm trying to chase everyone's opinion on Twitter all the time about it. And you guys could, like, help me and just say it into my ears. That would be amazing.
Well, being a child of the 80s, I fucking loved it. So, I mean, it had, like, people... It's so annoying, because when I got out of the movie, people were like, oh, it was just like Stranger Things, but like R-rated. You know, and I was like, you guys are not getting it. Like, I mean, these are obviously people who didn't grow up with films in the 80s. And of course, people are being introduced to that time period, I guess, that feeling through Stranger Things. So I kind of get it. You know, there's a shared actor in there. But I loved it. Like, it reminded me a lot of, like, everything I loved about, like, movies like The Goonies and Monster Squad. And then I think for me, it's, like, probably one of the best Stephen King adaptations so far. Like, I've always thought there's a handful of good Stephen King adaptations, but it feels like nobody really kind of, I don't know, can really get Stephen King onto film. Anyway, I think another one that terrified me that I think they did a great job was Pet Sematary. But most of the time, Stephen King films are hit or miss. I like them all, but I feel like this being the event film that it was, a horror film, kind of basically bringing it to the big screen as opposed to that to the miniseries, that actually I really dug the miniseries quite a bit. So a lot of people revisited it. They didn't like it. I still like most of it. Pennywise is probably played by Tim Curry is probably still my favorite thing out of that thing. But I don't have, like, I didn't hate it when I revisited it, but I can see where people would have, you know, problems with the miniseries. But for the most part, I absolutely adored it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And my daughter keeps bugging me to see it. And she's on the fence whether or not she wants to actually go to the theater, because to her, like, being in the theater, you're trapped. And you can't escape or pause or go get a snack when you're scared. So she's so far made up her mind that she's going to wait till it comes out on Blu-ray, but she's still kind of on the fence. Like, her mind might change. So that's my reaction to it.
Actually sat next to a group of 7-year-olds in the theater, and they were completely quiet. They laughed at the Losers Club. They handled it really well. They're little boys, and they tend to, like, play up when they're scared. But yeah, I think either way, you guys will have a really memorable experience with it.
And if you have a chance, check out Anya Novak's write-up on Birth Movie's Death about her going to see It with her 9-year-old son. Fantastic review, and actually I teared up and started crying during
that's a
that,
great point of view.
Review. And I like got all like emotional. I was like, what is wrong with me? Why am I getting emotional?
Why am I feeling things?
But it's great, like, seeing her son, like, get that film and get, like, the friendships, because he has, like, kind of a ragtag group of friends, I guess, and him kind of relating his friendships to the kids in the movies, just fantastic. Great, great review of the
film. I got to see it at the drive-in, which was a really, really special experience. One, it's always fun to be able to see something at a drive-in, because it just makes me think of those moments I had as a kid that made me fall in love with movies. And I think that it was sort of the perfect movie for that, because, you know, it's set in the 80s, and that's what I remember seeing as a kid in the movies that make me happy, like, you know, Gremlins or The Goonies or whatever. Like, that world is what I remember, and that's what I would see at the drive-in or growing up. And being able to see a bunch of kids laying in the flatbed of a truck, like, scream their face off was a total blast. As far as the movie itself is concerned, I think that it was a really nice interpretation of the text. I actually don't hate the liberties they took with it. I actually really like it. It has a very special place in my heart because I watched the miniseries when I was 4.5 with my mom. It is one of the earliest memories that I have. Like, I look back at childhood and I remember falling back in on a chair in preschool, like leaning back too far and falling and thinking I was going to die and watching it. Like, those are my two earliest memories. So, but a lot of people would think that I have a sense of fondness for it, which I don't. I think that the original miniseries is absolute trash. And the only reason that people like it is because Tim Curry as Pennywise was so remarkable and so effective. And that's what everyone cites as like their fear of clowns and whatnot. So seeing this movie sort of gave me the story that I always wanted from the miniseries, but never got. And I actually really liked Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise. I liked that he didn't try to do Tim Curry, because you just can't. That's like when people got upset, like, why wasn't Ash in the Evil Dead remake? Because you can't be fucking Ash. Like, it's just too iconic of a character. You have to do something completely different. Otherwise, everyone's just going to be mad that you're not as good as the other person. So I really respect the choices that he made with the character. CGI is a little iffy for me, but it wasn't enough to make me dislike the movie as a whole. I am really excited to see what they're going to do with the parents, or the adults, I should say, because the adult storyline is always what I never cared about with the miniseries. But I think that they've established such great relationships with all these kids that I'm really gonna feel for it when the adult stories hit.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're gonna be kind of splicing back with some flashback scenes.
I read somewhere, and I'm not sure if it's true, and I feel like I already talked on record acting like it was true, so if I'm mistaken, fuck me, I'm sorry. But I had heard somewhere that they already shot the scenes that would be needed for the sequel, because knowing how long it takes to make movies, that the kids will grow up.
Yeah, and they're at that age where, like, in a week, they look different.
Well, just look at Game of Thrones.
Right, their voices are all going to change, and it's going to be the Brady Bunch song all over again. But I saw it with a double feature of The Lost Boys, which is a really odd pairing, but it was a blast. I mean, we went from
awesome pairing.
We went from, you know, this really kind of sentimental big budget, or not big budget, mid budget horror movie that is like a complete cultural timepiece now, back to like the second gayest vampire movie ever made. And it was awesome. It was such a blast. I'd never seen it. I've never seen The Lost Boys on the big screen. So that was really exciting. And it's just so gay and wonderful. It makes me so happy. We just jumped all over your doorstep. Steph, did you have anything else?
No, you guys stamped everything there, and now my doorstep is empty. So,
cool. Right. I'll jump into some of the stuff that I saw. The first one I'll get out of the way, because it's a trash nightmare, and everyone knows it's a trash nightmare, is I had a fever today, and I decided to watch American Psycho 2 with Mila Kunis, because it had been a while. I honestly couldn't remember what happened in most of it, and then I watched it, and I went, yep, this is everything that I thought it was going to be. It's a mess, but I kind of love how much of a mess it is. It's like, I wouldn't call it a guilty pleasure, one, because I don't believe in them, and two, because I don't know if I actually liked it. But upon rewatching it, I'm not mad that I rewatched it. Like, I fully accept that this is a poorly constructed film and has no business being an American Psycho sequel. But it's so insane that I respect it. Because I just watch this movie happen, and it's like, how did William Shatner and Mila Kunis get this script and think, yeah, I'll sign on to this? Like,
because money?
They can't have even been paid that well, because the budget was probably 12 cents. I don't know. That's a movie that I would recommend if you're like six deep. Like, that's a good choice then, and really no other time. American Psycho 2. I also checked out the Malaysian zombie film, KL Zombie. I learned by watching it that I am not the target audience for Malaysian films. I need to watch more of them to understand them. Korean films, awesome. Japanese, Chinese, perfect. Malaysian, I have no idea what's happening. I don't understand that culture's sense of humor. I don't understand that culture's sense of scares. I don't understand a lot of things that are going on with their cinematic world. And that's totally cool. That just means that it's not for me. It's a very slapsticky zombie film about this like slacker stoner delivery guy who then has to like save the world against the zombie apocalypse. The zombie effects are pretty awesome. I will give it that. But there's just so much weird shit going on as far as pacing, as far as what I assume they're trying to consider comedy, but it almost feels like when you watch a Japanese commercial and you're like, wow, that is so over the top. You're just selling toothpaste. Chill out. But it's that for a whole movie where it's just like, that is not how a person responds to that situation. It's on Netflix if you really want to check it out. It's like a slide whistle away from just being a radio show soundboard set to film. It's so strange.
What was it called? KZ Zombie?
KL Zombie.
KL Zombie.
Yeah, the KL is I want to call it it's the Kuala Lumpur. Lumpur. It's a place. Like, it's a location. Gotcha. So it's, yeah. But it's about a slacker saving the world against zombies, pretty much. but there's some really weird stuff with like teachers yelling at children. I don't know what's happening in Malaysia, but I want to watch more Malaysian cinema now because it caught me so off guard that it's on me. Like, I just need to understand this culture more. So I watched that. Then I watched another Netflix exclusive, because that's what I do when I'm sick. I watched What Happened to Monday. Somebody's getting arrested on my street. That was a siren. What Happened to Monday is a post-apocalyptic film with Glenn Close and the actress who was the original Lisbeth Salander in the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo films. But what it is like, there is a crazy level of overpopulation in the world. Like, it's a global issue. So they have established a one child per family rule. And if you have multiple children, then what they will do, like if you have twins or something, is that they will take all of the children, but the oldest ones, and put them in like this cryogenic sleep so that when the world has figured out how to deal with this overpopulation, they can unfreeze these people and they can live amongst everyone else. Like, that's the promise that they make. Yeah, it's weird. That's the promise they make. But because it's a post-apocalyptic sci-fi movie, you can imagine that's probably not what actually happens. But What Happens to Monday is about seven sisters. They're all named after each day of the week. They have somehow managed to all survive where the government hasn't tracked them all down and, put them to sleep. But what happens is the girls all pretend to be one person. So they'll take turns going out in public and, today I'm Karen and then tomorrow you're Karen, and they do it by whatever day of the week their name is. So Monday goes out as Karen on Monday, Tuesday goes out as Karen on Tuesday. And then obviously, post-apocalyptic sci-fi, the government finds out and they're not happy about it. Shit gets really weird. There's a lot of really interesting social politics that go along with this, and like, who has the right to decide life, who has the right to decide what to do about population control, all sorts of craziness. I actually really, really enjoyed it. It does sort of fall into that kind of run-of-the-mill sci-fi action movie where everything is kind of shot the same, everything has the same color scheme. Glenn Close is fucking killer in it. She's really, really good. But I definitely recommend it. I like that one a lot. It's hard to review it without spoiling it because there's a lot of moving parts that are going on from Jump Street. But if you like sci-fi action films or like futuristic action films, definitely check it out. And the last thing that I saw is sort of horror, but not really horror. I binge watched all of American Vandal. Holy shit. American Vandal is my favorite TV series so far this year. Oh my God. So for those that don't know what it is, American Vandal is a mockumentary in the style of Making a Murderer, but it is about a kid who is accused of spray painting 27 dicks on teachers' cars. So it is this very, like, they take it very seriously, like, mockumentary, like, true crime series about, like, the most immature crime in the entire world. It's written by some of the people behind Funny or Die, but it is done with such earnesty that you can't help but be sucked into it the same way you would be watching Making a Murderer or The Keepers or any number of these sort of mini series focusing on a crime. It is so compelling and so laugh out loud funny that I don't know how more people aren't talking about it. Like, it is one of the best pieces of satire I've seen in, like, honestly, probably since Spinal Tap. Like, right now, my three favorite mockumentaries of all time are Spinal Tap, Drop Dead Gorgeous, and now this. It's that fucking good.
Okay, I'm convinced.
Oh, my, like, that's I was watching it, and I'm like, this is the stupidest thing. Like, oh my God, like, why would I care about some high schooler who spray painted 27 dicks? And then it just, like, starts to unravel into this world of, like, how we judge one another just based off of preconceived notions and how we all jump to conclusions and make assumptions and how all of those things can, like, be humongously detrimental to somebody's life. Like, oh God, it's so good, but it's so, so funny. And it's never, like, it's never wink at the camera, and I think that's what makes it work, because it'd be so easy to just go off the fucking deep end, because it's about, like, the hashtag that Netflix uses for it is hashtag who drew the dick. So you'd think, like, this is going to be the most immature and juvenile thing in the world, and it's not. Like, it's so good and compelling. So if you... Everyone watch it. I don't care what you're into. Watch it. It's incredible. Yeah. And that's my doorstep, y'all.
Very nice. All right. I'll try to blast through some stuff here. I have some books to talk about. What?
Oh, boy. You read some stuff.
What? I wanted to give it to talk about really quick. C. Robert Cargill. He's also known as Massworm. He was like a writer for Ain't It Cool News. And he's
the best.
Screenwriter. Sinister. Sinister 2. Doctor Strange. He's been a podcaster, super smart. Every time I listen to him, I'm like, fuck me, why am I doing podcasting? Because he's on a whole other level.
Junk Food Cinema is
Junk Food Cinema, yeah. So he has a few books out, and I finally bought all those books. I haven't read them yet, but I wanted to give them a shout out because it's going to take me a while to read these, and it's kind of fresh in my mind that you guys should check these out. So his new book is called Sea of Rust. It's like a sci-fi robot post-apocalyptic story, which I'm really excited to jump into. But he has two other books. I can't remember which. Dreams and Shadows was his first one, and then Queen of the Dark Things was the follow-up. So those two you can probably get on hardcover for, like, fairly cheap. I think I got these three books for, like, $25 total. But it's always cool to kind of support somebody who started out, you know, as a blogger, podcaster, and then he's moved on to all this amazing stuff. He's a really gifted writer. I've read the first chapter of Sea of Rust, and I can't wait. It's like I need to find time to just go in a corner in a room and just read. I need to figure that out. But I want to give a quick shout out to those books. Next, Paperbacks from Hell just came out today.
Oh, I want
this
that.
This is Grady Hendrix. It's a twisted history of 70s and 80s horror fiction. A lot of great write-ups about all these books. He's detailed every single book in different kind of subgenres. All the amazing cover art is on display in this book. If you're a fan of these types of books, definitely please grab this. It's beautiful. Like, oh my God. I love these types of books, but the way it's set up is just is gorgeous.
Is this more of a coffee table book where it's just the covers, or do they go in depth on the content?
There's some in-depth writing on the content. I mean, there's Let's see, Russ Martin's Conspiracy of Kink. There's a write-up on there.
Fuck, I mean, yeah.
He writes up about all these stories. It's not just pictures. Like, I have that VHS cover book, which is cool, but that's just all the covers. Like, there's actually, you know, some content in here to read. And it's set up more, I guess, kind of like a magazine, I guess. So, yeah, but it's fantastic. I haven't jumped into reading it yet. Of course, I just got today. But this thing is gorgeous. Definitely it's out by Quirk Books. And this thing is just it's a gorgeous book. And definitely if you're into collecting these books, grab this one.
Do you know how much it runs for approximately?
I think I got it for like $19.99. The retail was like $25. So
that's really exciting.
It's probably cheaper on Amazon. I would check it out.
Have you gone through all of it? Like, is that when you finished? Sorry. My brain, like, just stopped.
No, I have not. I mean, I got on my lunch break. I thumbed through it, and it's, you know, I want to dive into it more. But it's one of those I'll pick up and kind of read a chapter, look at the picture, you know, look at the art, and read about these books. I'll probably start a list of books I need to track down now. But it's pretty detailed. It's pretty awesome. And I just, God, they're like, the artwork of these books, just like, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, poster art was just a thing of beauty. Like, all these paperback covers are just so cool.
Yeah, I record this in my library, and I literally have, like, boxes of those 80s paperbacks behind me right now. I'll just take them out and look at them and be like, oh.
I highly recommend both of you check out the podcast Teen Creeps. It's a podcast dedicated to all of the horror teen paperback books of the 80s. It's super fun.
All right. And finally, there's a book series done by Insight Editions, and Cassine Gaines wrote all the text in this. It's The Dark Crystal, The Ultimate Visual History. I pre-ordered this thing like a year ago, and it like arrived today without me realizing that it was showing up. So...
how pretty is it?
It's fucking gorgeous. It's beautiful. Like, it's one of the most beautiful books I own. There's a lot of sketches in there, a lot of behind the scenes artwork. They even have, like, they'll kind of paste in, like, original, like, sketches, like, to make it look like it's an original sketch. It's kind of hanging on the paper inside of there. It's really different how they do it, but, it's gorgeous, and I guess there's a Labyrinth one as well that I didn't realize came out last year, so I guess I'll be getting that too. I'm going to run down movies super quick.
Are you sure you can talk about books more?
Hey, there's some pretty cool books. I don't know. I had to give some shout-outs. So real quick, the films that I've watched, I finally saw for the first time ever the movie Miracle Mile.
You've never seen that before? What?
Crazy, right? And I think I watched it like on the same weekend that like Trump had like was like making fun of North Korea. So I'm like, you know, watching this movie about a potential nuclear holocaust.
That could be any weekend in 2017.
Imagining that a nuclear holocaust can happen at any minute. But oh my God, it's awesome. If you haven't seen it, if you've been pushing it off, definitely give this thing a watch. It surpassed my expectations. And it's one of those movies too that for some reason I stayed in the dark. I had no idea it was really about like, you know, potential nuclear war. So pretty great. That's all I'll talk about.
That was fast. I'm impressed.
Yeah, you know, we got other stuff we need to get to. We got to get to these movies. And I'll make a note on some of these things I haven't talked about. I'll talk about them next time. All right. Let's jump into news with Josh Obershaw, and we'll be back talking about The Slayer right after this. Well, Josh Obershaw joins us now for the news. Josh, what's up, man? It's been a little while since you've been on. We had our little Fantastic Fest episode last time, and now you're back.
Yes, I am back, and it's almost October, so I'm really, really excited. There's a lot of stuff we got to go through.
All right, well,
it's the season. All right, well, first off, we already knew that Cult of Chucky was going to be coming to home video on October 3rd, including another box set with all the Child's Play movies. But guess what? It's going to be coming to Netflix that same day.
Wow. I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know either. I mean, I'm worried that it's going to take a huge chunk out of the sales of the home video. That's my biggest worry.
It's already leaked, apparently, and
a
rip of it has. And the director tweeted out that Universal has the – and of course, the people that leaked it tweeted it out, so Universal has their information. So I say for this release, like, look, if you adore the Chucky series like we do, if you want this to keep going, it's been the same director, I think writer or –
Yeah,
I could have my information wrong as far as that goes, but it's been the same director in every single film. That's huge, and I feel like that's something that needs to be supported. So please support this film. It's only like $16.99 on Amazon. Pre-order that shit if you're a fan. And, Netflix is great. Like, Devil's Candy was on Netflix. I watched it before I bought it. It's not even out yet, and it's on Netflix. I'll be buying it when it comes out, but... I mean, streaming is great and all, but if it's something you love, like, spend the money and buy the physical media, because that helps more of these get made, helps these filmmakers move on to their next gig and stuff like that. So really, if you want to support the movie, purchase it, whether digitally or physical. So, all right, high horse off. I'm done.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. if you want to preview it before you buy it, fine. Watch it on Netflix or watch it on AMC Fear Fest, because it's, believe it or not, it's playing during that this year too.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so, but if you like it, please buy it. I mean, I'm sure as shit gonna buy it, and I'll be wearing my new Fright Rags baseball tee, to celebrate, because new Chucky. Reason to celebrate. All right, moving on. Let's see. Quick tidbit. The Dark Tower is going to be coming to Blu-ray and DVD on Halloween. It's going to include deleted scenes, bloopers, and some featurettes. So that's going to be courtesy of Sony. See if there's any other quick bits that I can go through. Paramount has announced – well, David Lynch himself announced on Twitter that Paramount is going to be releasing the new season of Twin Peaks on home video on December 5th.
Awesome.
So everybody take note, and I need to catch up on the original Twin Peaks and Fire Walk With Me.
Me so too. That gives me a little bit – I have never watched any of that.
All right.
It's a huge commitment.
It is. It is. I mean – I mean, the first season is only, 6 to 8 episodes, and it's pretty really, really quick. So
I'll get to it. It's on my list. I'll get to it.
All right. And another quick tidbit for all you heavy metal fans, especially the band Slipknot. Eagle Rock Entertainment is releasing their concert Day of the Gusano on October 20th, just in time for Halloween. It's their first show in Mexico City. It was taped in December of 2015 in support of their album 5, The Great Chapter. And it's shot in HD and directed by the band's own M. Sean Crahan, or Clown, as he's known. So, if you like your Halloween heavy, be sure and pick that up.
Awesome.
Also, from Warner Archive, coming in October, they've got The Hidden on the 3rd, The Green Slime on the 10th, and get this, Knuckle is coming to Blu-ray. That's going to be on the 24th. Yes. I've heard a lot of good things about that one. I can't wait to see it. Because I'm a slasher junkie. Arrow. Let's take a look at Arrow. They just announced their December slate, and there's really not much. They're closing out the year, but putting out the house films individually.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. So House 1 and 2 are coming out individually on both sides of the Atlantic. House 3, a.k.a. Horror Show, and House 4 are going to be UK only. And guess what? You remember that American Horror Project box set?
Yes.
they're releasing the movies included in those individually as well. So yeah. You've got, let's see, The Witch Who Came from the Sea, Carnival of Blood, and The Premonition. Those are coming out. Sweet Carrie box set. That's coming out on December 11th.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's really good. I've bought Carrie so many times that I'm just like, well, that's cool.
Yeah. I still haven't bought the Scream Factory one. That's the one I'm really looking forward to. Yeah. So I'll be happy with that. So yeah, that's Arrow for 2017.
Very nice.
Oh, excuse me. They said that 2018 is going to be pretty stacked, so I'm already giddy.
They're doing some steel books. Looks like Bride of the Reanimator is getting a steel book as well as Hellraiser.
Hellraiser.
So if you're a steel book collector, you know, definitely check that out. I'm trying to think of, like, how far back, you know, what we've missed. You know, but
as far as the steelbooks, the only three I know of are Bride of Reanimator, Society, which I have, and Hellraiser, which I'm okay. Going back and forth because I still want that. I still want that Scarlet Box, goddammit. So,
it's so if any,
oh, man. So if anybody out there is feeling pretty generous this Christmas, hint, hint. All right, moving on. That's me. Blue Underground, they're releasing Bob Clark's Death Dream on November 28th. This is a 2K restoration from the 35 negative. It's going to be a collector's edition combo pack. Let's see what's in this thing, because it is pretty damn stacked. Here we go, Death Dream. Recollection with star Anya Liffey and writer makeup artist Alan Ormsby. Damn, it's a lot. Theatrical trailer, collectible booklet, limited edition packaging, slipcase, all that stuff. Wow, this is definitely worth it. I don't remember this movie at all. I saw it once on Netflix years ago, but I can't retain anything from that movie, so I need to see this again. So there's another something else from Blue Underground that I want to mention. Okay, both of their editions of Amsterdammed and Dario Argento's The Stendhal Syndrome. Apparently, there's some kind of problem with the disc, so they got a replacement program. So if you go to their website, they should have instructions on how to get your replacement copy. So if you bought those already,
okay,
take note of that. I don't know what's wrong with them. I just heard this recently.
Good to know.
Yeah, and they're those. Yeah, they are. Severn are putting out The Devil's Reign on Halloween. There's a lot of bonus features for this one. And also, it's going to come with a slipcover, but apparently their slipcovers are almost out. So if you're a fan of this movie or if you're really, really curious about it, I mean, it's got an all-star cast. Ernest Borgnine's in it. William Shatner. Tom Skerritt. Who else was it? Oh, yeah, I think John Travolta has a small part. I might be mistaken, but I'm really curious to see this one. So, yeah, and plus, you know, 70s Satan worship movies. I'm always down for that.
Totally down.
So that one's coming out on Halloween from Severin. And let's see. Next up, Scream Factory. Jackals comes out on October 3rd. I've been hearing good things about that. The Dawn of the Dead remake is going to be a two-disc collector's edition. There's going to be two versions of that movie, new interviews. That one comes out on October 24th. Also a two-disc collector's edition is George Romero's Land of the Dead. That one comes out on Halloween. Again, two versions of the movie, two discs. All of the old features from that DVD are going to be ported over. Same thing with Dawn of the Dead. So if you like those movies, take note of those.
Did they say anything about a new transfer for the Dawn of the Dead remake?
Yeah, it's supposed to be taken. It's a new HD master taken from the digital, because I think it was shot digital.
Yeah,
right. And the longer version is supposed to have HD inserts. I don't know what that means. Huh. If the thing is digital in the first place, I don't know. Same thing with Land of the Dead, by the way. Now, Silent Night, Deadly Night, that one comes out on December 5th, and It's going to be a 4K restoration of the original theatrical and unrated versions. As far as like the quality of that version, because I know there have been a lot of complaints about, you know, the uncut version that we got on the DVD and, of course, the Blu-ray that Anchor Bay put out. So they say they are trying so hard to get it to match the rest of the film as much as possible. So we'll see how it goes. But there's a lot new features, like a new interview with Linnea Quigley. I know. Dicey. New audio commentary with Robert Brian Wilson and co-executive producer Scott J. Schneid. And there's get this. Screen Factory are offering this package where you can get the poster, a slipcover, and a Billy Killer Santa doll from NECA.
That doll looks amazing too.
How good it looks.
I know, me too. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the artwork for the new artwork for the Blu-ray, excuse me, but that doll, man, I don't know. That's tempting. So that's Silent Night, Deadly Night. But the big news regarding Screen Factory that came out since we last spoke, Hell Night. 1981's Hell Night, starring Linda Blair, is coming to Blu-ray. That one is set for December 12th. It is going to be a collector's edition combo pack, but the extras haven't been announced yet. This movie is fantastic. I mean, if you love early 80s slashers or haunted house movies, it's kind of a little bit of both. It's just fantastic. You really, really need to pick this up. So what else is going on? As far as home video news, I mean, that's it. But the biggest horror news that has come out since the last time I was on the show, Jamie Lee is back. Jamie Lee Curtis is going to be a part of the new Halloween as Laurie Strode.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they're doing this whole disregard certain sequels type thing or if they're just trying to make it just to do a straight sequel to one or two. I don't know, but I'm interested in seeing. Or they may surprise us and keep them all wrapped together. I know people are, you know, all the fan theories are all coming out, you know.
I don't know where to wrap my head around it. I mean, I already said my piece about the continuity of the Halloween series way back when I first joined. So yeah, you just pick and choose which continuity is yours, or hell, maybe they might. Like you said, I mean, I saw something on Twitter saying that Malika Khan said that this was going to be the 11th chapter of Halloween.
Okay.
That kind of threw me for a loop. I'm like, wait, so you're including the Rob Zombie movie? How? What? I don't know. I don't know if he's full of crap or high or right. Just trying to. I have no idea what this new movie is. Nobody knows for sure. So, and we've got a whole year to just blow each other's minds about what this could be.
Yeah. Bring it on. It sounds unconventional with the writers and director involved and everything. So,
and John Carpenter getting involved again too.
Yeah, bring it on! I'm excited to see it.
So that's all I have, Sean.
Awesome, Josh. What a month. Thank you very much. We will we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next time, and it will be in October.
Yes. Pumpkinize your Twitter icons. I don't know if people still do that. I've done it every year since I started Twitter. Do it the jack-o'-lantern.
I think this is my first year I'm going to do that. Like, I've met so many great people via Twitter in the last year, and they're doing that shit. So
that's fun. And choose your October name. I've already chosen mine on Twitter. So
actually, I haven't.
Tom Nix actually was going around saying if you couldn't think of anything or whatever. You know, let him know and he'll do the job for you. See, he named a whole bunch of people, which is awesome. So he named me Sean C. Dracula, which is – that's an easy layup, but I'll take it. It's good.
Right. I should hit him up too because all I got is Count Joshua. That's it. I need some ideas. So please.
Hit him up. Hit up Tom Nix. He'll help you out. But, yeah, I don't know if people are still doing the – the jack-o'-lantern, you know, profile pics. But I've done this every year. I've used the same one. So, you know, I did mine a little bit early. So come October 1st, we'll see who's still doing it. So it's fun seeing my timeline full of, you know, orange and black jack-o'-lanterns. Just makes me super happy in October. So
me too.
All right, Josh. Thanks.
No problem. See you guys in October.
What you're about to see may shock you. It may frighten you more than you've ever been frightened before. Don't worry. It's only a maddening, horrifying nightmare. Or is it?
All right, so Arrow Video, what I love about them is they'll release, you know, pretty well-known things that we've all been anticipating and waiting for, and then they'll come out and they'll release a movie like 1982's The Slayer. It has an amazing cover art, which maybe oversells the film a little bit, but this came out in 1982. Directed by J.S. Cardone, who also wrote the screenplay with Bill Ewing. And is kind of a precursor, in a sense, to the Nightmare on Elm Street films. The idea of, you know, trying to stay awake, not going to sleep, because when you go to sleep, something bad will happen. I don't know if they're all couples or there's some siblings there as well, right? They all go to like a island getaway to kind of hang out and party, I guess, and get away. And they kind of get stranded on there because a storm is coming in, and then something starts killing them off one by one, mostly while our main actress Kay is sleeping.
And I'll interject with, so The Slayer came out 2 years before A Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think a lot of people pushed this movie aside because they assume that it's going to be something similar, because it does deal with a slasher movie and dreams and blah, blah, blah. But I would say that while Nightmare on Elm Street is clearly the more superior film, like, they're in no way, shape, or form the same film. They have dream killing, and that's really where the similarities end. I think that this is one of the better forgotten slashers that I've seen, but I wouldn't say that it's like an absolute must have. But it is one that I'm really, really glad that they put out, because it is a lot of fun and the gore effects are pretty gnarly. I feel like I just like went into my review immediately when I was just going to try to make a point about Nightmare on Elm Street. So my bad.
No, it's all good. You know, Stephanie, what did you think of The Slayer?
I enjoyed it. It seems like it's pretty divisive with a lot of people. It's certainly not perfect. You could argue it's on purpose. That's a little disjointed with the whole dream aspect of it, but I thought it was very original. I thought it was pretty unique. And like BJ said, the gore effects were incredible. Like, if some people might feel themselves drift if they're not into slower pacing, but once, you know, you actually see the kills, it pays off, in my opinion. So I think it's definitely an unusual film, but I think it has a little something for everybody too.
Well, the kills, I think one of them in particular was enough for it to land on the video nasties list, I believe. So that's kind of where it's been, you know, why it's such a big deal that it's out and it's uncut, because for the longest time it was presented in a, especially in the UK, I guess, it was presented in an edited version. So, but yeah, I really dug it. I had a lot of fun with it. I kind of got the feeling after a while that it'd be kind of a slower pace film, like a lot of kind of wandering around in, empty rooms and basements and barns. But it still kind of holds a sense of dread. Like, you know, my daughter's, she's so curious now. Like, she's always like, are you watching a horror movie? Can I come watch a little bit? So she would sneak in and I would kind of notice that she's watching with me, and then she would be like, okay, later. Like, but she would get like the suspense and get what it was trying to do. And she wouldn't want to stick around to see the payoff. But yeah, I liked it. You know, I thought somebody said to me on Twitter, cause I said I was watching it. They said, have fun with your nap. You know, like I don't.
Yeah, I got comments too. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, like I
give me a chance to see it.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's because of that that I would like rebel and be like, screw you guys, I'm gonna enjoy this thing. But you know, I had some fun with it. But yeah, I would agree it's not a like must have. Like I would say if you can, you know, try to see it. Or that was. It's tough now because some of the stuff, it's hard to find legit, you know, ways to watch these, to rent things like this. I know, I'm not sure.
And the Arrow release looks really, really nice.
Oh, yeah.
And the sound is really good.
Yeah.
And a lot of times these forgotten slasher films get lackluster releases because sometimes the only thing they can find is like a shitty old VHS tape, but the transfer on this is really, really nice. So if you're one of those purists that need everything to look perfect, like this is one that I'll definitely recommend.
It looks fantastic. So, I mean, if you're going in craving like some monster movie, because that's kind of what, you know, some of the screenshots I see on, you know, the advertising for it, the cover is just fantastic. With that creature that shows up, you know, for not very long. But yeah, I mean, I would say definitely check this thing out.
Some scenes I felt like there's a little bit of Carnival of Souls in there. And it's nothing like the movie The Witch Who Came from the Sea. But when I was thinking about movie titles and cover art and what the movie actually is, and it reminded me of The Witch Who Came from the Sea and just how completely different the expectations are from what the film actually is.
Yeah, because I was going in, you know, thinking that I would see something just an off-the-wall crazy monster flick, but it's definitely not. It's, you know, I mean, it's definitely a lot more reserved than that, and I do like the surreal elements, especially when you get towards the climax of the film. Like, I do like that you kind of, you know, you're left kind of feeling like, well, all right, well, what exactly happened? You know, like, what is causing all this, you know, and is it, you know, is it her dreams or whatever? But you know, there's a lot, I think, to really like about this film. And, I don't know. It's not like a crazy film to really deconstruct, and but it's just it gets the job done for anyone who kind of wants something a little bit different and something off the beaten path a little bit, you know. But yeah, it just looks amazing.
Yeah, 4K scan from the original camera negative, so they went all out for this.
Yeah.
Vijay, did you have anything else to say about this layer?
Nope, that was really it. That I like it. I don't think that it's great, but I like it. I see its importance. It is one of the better forgotten slashers. I'll give it that. It's not... And because... I guess this is where I get a little soapboxy. Because it is one of the earlier ones, too, it's really easy to see some of, like, the gore effects or some of... Because this movie plays, like, a psychological thriller and a slasher and a monster movie, and it's kind of all over the place. So I think people may dislike it because it doesn't follow the traditional sort of slasher formula, but that really hadn't been cemented yet. So I can't really hold that against the movie. And I think that's why people probably don't like it, because it does sort of have that slow pacing and they're used to kind of a slash and dash style of film. And that's probably why this one got forgotten, in addition to Freddy Krueger coming and just, you know, totally fucking up their gimmick. But, yeah, I mean, if you like slashers, this one, I think, is an important one to see, because it is different, and it hadn't gotten sucked into the slasher machine yet. It was still trying to figure out how to put the moving parts together to perfect it.
Well, this is J.S. Cardone. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. Cardone. This is his first directorial stab at directing. And some of those other movies he's directed, I'm not 100% familiar with. I'm wondering if Brad would be more familiar with them. But he wrote the screenplay for The Stepfather, the remake, the prom night remake, and then even The Covenant.
Oh, geez.
Also The Forsaken. So in the 2000s, he had a rough go with some of these things. Are you guys there?
Yep. I just didn't think your joke was that funny, okay. So I didn't laugh.
That's fine.
I'm just being honest. Brad's not here. I got to make up for it.
Yeah, right? So the Arrow release is pretty damn good. They, of course, like with everything that they do, they go all out. There is close to an hour of a retrospective making of documentary. So definitely worth it for that. Like these movies always, those types of things always make the movie even better for me when I kind of see what went into it and the memories that they had. There's also a couple audio commentaries with J.S. Cardone, Eric Weston, and Carol Cottonbrook. There's an audio commentary with The Hysteria Continues. Is that like a podcast or something? Or because I've seen these guys do...
Yeah, it's like a British podcast.
They've done a couple commentaries before. I haven't listened to them because I'm a little wary of, you know, a comedy movie podcast person doing an audio commentary. But that's there. I hear people like them. I don't know.
Very diplomatic.
I'm assuming both of you haven't heard their podcast. Have you?
I've heard a little bit. It's not for me, but, you know.
Which podcast? I'm sorry.
Hysteria Continues.
I tried a while ago, but it's not for me.
We're all diplomatic.
I think you're proving my point, though, in a roundabout way.
Well, I will say this while we're talking about it. There is a podcast, and I only feel comfortable recommending it on this podcast because it is nothing like ours. But there is a comedy podcast called My Neighbors Are Dead that has been fucking killing me for two weeks nice. Now. Like, all the episodes are like 20 minutes long, but what they do is they have like a comedian, like Paul F. Tompkins was on it recently. And what they do is they have them pretend to be a character that would be like a tertiary character in a horror movie and to talk about it from their perspective. So like there's one who it's the guy was the caterer at Damien's birthday party in The Omen when the nanny hung herself. It's hit. Hysterical, because it's just these people just going off the rip. Like there's they do a Child's Play one, and there's this woman who's like trying to be like somewhat of a crackhead who used to date Charles Lee Ray. Paul F. Tompkins on his episode, he plays the neighbors who live on the other side of the Freelings' house. It's unbelievable. Like it cracks my shit up. Some of them are better than others, but the Omen one got me, Blair Witch got me, Poltergeist got me. They just did one for Candyman that got me pretty hard. But yeah, they're super, super fast too. They're like 20 okay. minutes, 30 minutes, if that. So you can crash through them, but they're super entertaining for anyone who likes horror.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, well, let's move along to our next film. Let's jump into Stream Screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
Scream, I'll bring you back.
Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
Today, we are talking about a Shudder exclusive. This is a 2014 film called Among the Living, not to be confused with Anthrax's third studio album of the same name. This is directed by Julian.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ha! Mari.
Boo.
And Bastillo. My jokes are just awful. I apologize. This had its premiere in 2014 at South by Southwest. And it, what I like about among the living is you kind of get a perspective from, I think, a few different people. You get a perspective from the actual this father and his son and some shit that goes down with them. But then you also get the perspective from these three young adolescent boys, very similar to like the kids, you know, the kids in an 80s, you know, movie, or the kids in It, or whatever. And then you have kind of a, you know, I guess home invasion, you know, type film as well. So like, for me, it felt like a mishmash of subgenres, but I really, really dug the flick. They, of course, these directors did the film Inside, which is one of my favorite of the French, you know, horror films that came out at that time.
And what I find super interesting about this one is that it starts off super mm-hmm. brutal and gruesome, and then it does, and then like it doesn't continue with it. Like, it doesn't have that Inside level of like just carnage, constant carnage. Like, it then has a lot of like off-screen mm-hmm. kills, which I thought was really, really interesting, especially given that that's sort of what they're known for, and they did something totally different.
Yeah, that first scene, you're like, yeah, these are the guys who made Inside, I get it. But yeah, it has so many layers to it.
Yeah, I almost was like not wanting to watch it because I knew that they had directed Inside. I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And finally, I was like, well, it yeah. came around for me to just sit down and watch it. And I was like, all right, here we go. But yeah, it starts off that way. And then you're kind of into, you know, kind of, you know, you're following these kids around, and they're all very, they're, you know, they're little punks, you know, but they're likable, and you're kind of get sucked into their story and kind of their struggles. You get a little bit of background on each of these boys, and, you know, they skip school. They're all in trouble anyway. So why the hell would we stick around to school? They go and skip, and then they stumble across in one of their old hangouts that somebody is now living there, and they see that somebody's potentially been kidnapped, and it goes from there. And I like that it makes things interesting when they go to the cops, because they're well known in this small town to be troublemakers. So you have that element in there as well, where the cops don't necessarily want to really believe these kids.
Yeah, I don't think you can gloss over where they hang out to play, though. It's a decrepit, abandoned movie studio. There's like a giant lamp. It's amazing. It's like the dream playground.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, dream playground probably for weirdos like us, too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I would definitely, if I lived near a place like that during the summer times, I would definitely probably be frequenting that place. It's really cool. So did this play in theaters other than like festivals? Do any of you know?
To my knowledge, no. And I think that's probably part of the Shudder exclusive deal. I know it did the festival run, but I don't remember hearing really anything about it until Shudder got their hands on it. I knew it existed because I'm a creep that stalks IMDb and I like these directors, but I never got sort of the art house trailer for it, which usually happens when it's playing. Like I have a theater near me that plays kind of all of those limited run special things. They'll do like a one night only special, and I don't remember ever seeing this. So my assumption is that Shudder saw it at a festival, said, "Holy shit, we want this," and mm-hmm. then bought it. But I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that.
What did both of you think about kind of the? I mean, there's definitely three different. I don't know if they're acts, because it definitely feels like three different films in a way. Like, you get your, you know, brutal Inside type film in the beginning, then you get your kind of 80s, you know, kid horror in the middle, and then it breaks into more of a home invasion with, you know, I don't want to give away the baddie in this, because I think this is something that needs to be discovered for yourself. But this home invasion, you know, scenario, what did you think of that that breakup of these kind of subgenres.
No, I did actually kind of like that because it allowed some time to breathe, especially after the opening being so just holy shit. So I don't know. I like it. I'm kind of over tradition and I like when people fuck with structure, but that's just me.
Yeah. I almost don't even think of it as three acts, even though it makes sense that way, because that ultra brutality happens before we're even 10 minutes in. And you can almost say there's some It parallels with the Losers Club, with the kids here. So, if you're still kind of craving that feeling, this would probably be a good one, even though the overall structure is nothing like it. I thought the home invasion angle was terrifying. I think it might be because there are children involved. But,
oh, yeah. And one's an infant, so it's like, yeah. Oh, my God.
It was definitely one. Oh, that was a nail biter. I think it did really well, even though towards the end, we really see the bad guy. Like full lit, but and there's some very, very brutal scenes, but building up to that was tension, not really like cheap jump scares or anything. We really got to know the characters. So yeah, there's a lot in this movie, but I think it was all balanced perfectly.
I'm definitely a fan. It's available on Shudder right now. And if you haven't signed up for Shudder, it's not that much a month. It's
just $5.
So, yeah, they give you the first month for free, really easy to kind of sign up for it. I signed up for it through Amazon Prime because you can add, like, channels or whatever. So I do, like, HBO, and then I did Shudder through Amazon. And I just open up the Amazon app, and I can search any of these movies. So I just type in, Among the Living, and it shows up, and I just go to Shudder and watch it. And so I haven't dove into Shudder that much just because I have my to watch piles are already out of control, but I like that there are these exclusives, especially Shudder, because you know it's something that you're not going to really see anywhere else. It kind of gives you, kind of forces you to watch it in a sense, but if more of their exclusives are like this, like I'll definitely give them a shot. Is there other horror exclusives that we should be maybe paying attention to that you both know about?
They have Prevenge.
Okay.
The pregnancy, like written, directed by a pregnant woman, starring a pregnant woman horror movie. It's pretty nuts. I'm not even going to attempt to say the actual title because I will mispronounce it and sound like an ignorant American. But they have the exclusive rights to the Ring versus the Grudge movie. They have Always Shine, which is fucking great. I really recommend that one. It stars one of the leads from the episode of Black Mirror, San Junipero, that I love so much. That is now an Emmy Award winner, by the way. Always Shine is fucking killer. So I would definitely recommend that one too. As far as other exclusives, I don't have a list in front of me, but they do get pretty awesome stuff. Oh, I mean, they have 31. If you really want to watch that, they have 31.
Okay, I'll take that. I don't know.
They do have the making of and behind the scenes of 31, which I actually liked more than the actual film.
Well, yeah, so one thing Rob Zombie does, he does really good behind-the-scenes documentaries.
Yeah, I always love those.
Well, yeah, I mean, thoughts on Shudder in general. Like, I'm just finally jumping into it, and at first I was like, do I really need another streaming service? So I'm kind of late to the game. I know a lot of the other sites and podcasts are talking about Shudder and everything, and most of the stuff, I was like, well, I can find that elsewhere, so why would I need to do that? But they have, like, their library is pretty extensive. So it's like, if you're just jumping into horror, like, I would have loved to have this when I was first really starting to explore the horror genre more than just like the mainstream stuff, you know, because just because there's so much out there and it's like all right here and through Shudder. Like, I know a lot of people don't collect Blu-rays like I do, and they use exclusively streaming services Have any of you compared Shudder versus like Netflix and stuff like that as far as the horror selection goes? Like they say that they're I guess supposed to have more than the other services. Is that true?
I would say so, absolutely.
Yeah, if I was really scrolling, and the fact that they take the time to organize things into sub-genres and everything, I think that's pretty great, too, especially for people new to the genre. That's really helpful.
Awesome. Any final thoughts on Among the Living?
It's gross at the beginning. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, but give it a shot. Like that was the thing. Like when it started, I was like, "Oh God, here we go, here we go." And then it cuts to the kids, and I was like, "Oh, okay, I'll settle into this for a little bit," you know. So, yeah, I think that's all. That was almost needed, I think, because the beginning is just so in your face.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I've actually thought back to it a few times after seeing it. So, yeah, I would recommend it.
Oh, there's a pretty brutal kill in this, too, with one of the policemen.
I thought the father one was pretty terrible and humiliating, too.
Well, yeah, but there's a pretty good gore effect, I guess is what I was saying. It's always good when people get sliced and diced in effective ways. Interesting ways. I'll leave it at that. But yeah, Among the Living, streaming now through Shudder. Check this out. And that's, like, it's not really set for any home video release or anything that you guys know of. I think it's just Shudder for now.
Yeah, it looks that way.
But this is one I would love to see a physical copy with. I would love to see some interviews and stuff, but, you know, whatever. All right, let's jump into VHS. Oh, my God.
Vicky.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be.
Oh my God! Today we are talking about a 1987 slasher. It's called Backwoods. It's also known as The Geek. Not related to Luther the Geek. But there is chickens.
Sean, you're 0 for 3.
IMDb just says this: a hillbilly father and his idiot son terrorize and murder campers. But I think it's a little more than that. This couple, who for some reason at one point claimed to be brother and sister, are on a camping trip, and they help out this fellow. You know, he's living off the land. I wouldn't call him a hillbilly, but they help his daughter. Is having an issue. She's choking. And it turns out the man is a doctor. He helps clear the airway, and they get invited to dinner with this father. They don't take the daughter to a hospital, which probably after that procedure they should just go directly to a hospital. But they go back for dinner, and then of course he also has this son who's not all there, and he terrorizes these two campers. Is that about it? Is that a good enough synopsis?
Yeah, I think
I hated this movie. There, I said it. I fucking hated this movie. I am so sick and done with fucking backwoods hillbilly bullshit. I can't do it anymore. I've seen so many. And I'm sure Brad recommended this because he loves it.
Yes.
But you know what? Brad's not fucking here. So I hate this. I hate everything about it. It was not funny. It was not entertaining. I'm also bitter. That's fine. But I can't deal with, like, the mentally handicapped redneck killing people. Like, I'm so sick of it and done.
There's not
That's
too it. Many.
That's my review.
There's not too many death scenes in this movie. Like, this is like a slash, almost like a slasherless slasher in a sense. Because there's not all.
I do like your label of slasher. I think that was pretty appropriate.
The only thing that I will say that I liked about it that gave it kind of that song that opens up in the beginning. That song that they're singing or whatever, that guy's singing, like that kind of gives it a vibe you know, that I thought that was, you know, a bit creepy. It is definitely like very slow paced, especially for like a 1987, what would be backwoods slasher. Like, I really don't know what else to say. I mean, there's certain things I did dig about it, but it's almost like it could have been like a short film. Like, there's a lot of filler, I feel, in this one.
Yeah, I wish I felt as passionately about BJ about it, but I love slashers. I love slashers. I don't mind seeing idiots run through the woods. I haven't quite hit my quota yet, but this one's kind of baffled. I was just waiting for it to be. I'm like, okay, that was kind of a weird, goofy scene at the table. Maybe they're going to go a little weird. Nope, they'll pull back and it'll get more standard. It's like, oh, ooh, that was a pretty decent kill. Maybe we'll get more fun. No, let's pull from that. Watch a guy talk next to a tree. It doesn't really go all the way for anything. And it left no taste in my mouth, good or bad. It kind of just existed.
Yeah. I think that's why it left such a bad taste in my mouth, because it's so nothing. Like, I hate it. I'm sorry. I just hated it. And I'm sure, like, Brad's going to listen to this on the way to Fantastic Fest and be like, they're a bunch of idiots. Blah.
There's no one defending this.
He won't listen. I would say, instead of watching this, watch Just Before Dawn.
Yes.
Or The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes, agreed.
Maybe Blood Tracks.
Oh.
Hell, watch Luther the Geek.
Definitely watch Luther the Geek.
Out on Vinegar Syndrome.
True.
But yeah, I mean, a geek is a person, I guess, who bites the heads off chickens.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. They even have a definite... is that a spoiler if they define it?
Yeah, I love it. By the way, this is a real thing. Here's the definition. Yeah, that was interesting.
Well, this was released on VHS in 1988, apparently, and I don't know if it made it to DVD or not. This is stuck on VHS for sure. It was apparently streaming on Amazon Prime for a while, but it has been taken off because now it says our agreements with the content provider don't allow purchases of this title at this time.
I wonder how many complaints they got when they took that off.
I don't know. If you're really curious, there is a decent VHS rip on YouTube, which I think I can endorse this type of stuff on YouTube because it's not available anywhere else. If you're curious and there's no legit way to watch something, definitely, check it out there. But we warned you.
It's
the promise there.
Don't go into the backwoods.
It doesn't fulfill. Promises. And I still don't know why they told that guy that they were brother and sister, because like the next scene is them like getting it on.
That's some fun.
And I was like, I legit thought they were brother and sister, and I went, whoa, this just got crazy. Well, it's called Backwoods, but you know, but then I realized that they were just joshing with the guy, apparently.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, they fooled you, Sean.
They totally did. I probably checked my Twitter or something like that and missed that they were messing around. All right. Well, that's Backwoods, everybody. Sorry Brad's not here to gush for 30 minutes about Backwoods.
He's going to be so bad.
We've done this to him before. Like the VHS Oh My God segment is very much hit or miss because he picks all those. And sometimes there's some treasures in there, and most of the time it's something that I wish I didn't sit down and waste an hour and a half.
Yep.
Just record a rebuttal with him later. It'll be great. Just ranting.
That can be his.
Gosh, we really need to do these. I got to get going on these special content for our patrons. I apologize, everyone. We've been awful with the exclusive content, getting that out there. Our schedules have been crazy, and we'll make up for it. Don't worry. We will. But yeah, you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll sit down with Brad for a late night session, and we'll talk about Backwoods. I'll need to ask him why he recommended this and what he thought. So if you're a patron subscriber I'll definitely make that happen.
Perfect.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this week's episode. Brad is going to be reporting in from Fantastic Fest over the next week. We'll have a recap. We'll probably have Brad McCarg back as well. I don't know. We'll talk to all those guys from the last episode and see if by getting them back so they can recap it. And I can just sit back and drink while they talk because that's what I did on the last episode. I barely had a thing to say.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Please check out our sponsors. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors and check all them out. Of course, Vinegar Syndrome. We'll be doing a Vinegar Syndrome episode here very soon, probably within the next couple of weeks. We'll do that. My Vinegar Syndrome stack is starting to get a little taller, and I'm expecting a shipment from them any day now. And their October lineup looks off the charts, so I can't wait for. So we'll probably maybe October we'll do that and talk about all those flicks. Also, Coffee Shop of Horrors, you can get 10% off by using the code Screamcast over at CoffeeShopOfHorrors.com. Please check them out. Some amazing coffee from them. They're let's see. I'm not sure if you can get the 10% discount on top of this. You might, but they do have a few products of the month. Harem and Scarum, The Nut House, as well as Burial Grounds, and they have a Earl Grey tea that they have on sale as well. So check that out. Oh, and they made it. There's a note here that they did make it through Hurricane Irma.
Good.
Which is fantastic.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Jeebus. Grindhousevideo.com, please make them your first choice when you're searching for these flicks. Check them out over there. I've been meaning to do a giveaway, but then that whole hurricane bullshit happened, so I haven't been able to. I need to get with Mike about doing a giveaway for our patrons. We'll do that very soon, so just check back on social media. I'll be letting everyone know. We'll do it. We'll try to do it live. Maybe I'll do it on a weekend so I can have my kids pull names out of the hat again. That was kind of fun. Also, want to thank Maintain for making sure our site is safe and secure with the store. And everything. There's a link to check them out. If you're a website provider, you may want to check them out and see if they can keep your site secure as well. Music by Wolfman of Mars and art by Kevin Spencer. Again, you can check all these things out over at thescreamcast.com/sponsors. You can also find all of our social media links over on the website. A huge thank you to oneofus.net for hosting our show each week.
Yeah.
All right, BG, where can people find you rambling online this week?
You can find me on the Twitter. It's just my name, BJ Colangelo. Got some cool stuff that I'll be announcing in October, so be on the lookout for that.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And Stephanie, where can people find you?
Also on Twitter, under Scrawfish.
And you can find me over at Sean C. DeRager on Twitter. All right, am I missing anything? I'm trying to think. I hope not. Well, BJ, are you going to be doing the little extra podcast thing? Is that still on the table or no? I know you are a busy, busy woman.
It is definitely still on the table. It is still on the table. We just have to find time to actually record.
Yep. All right. I have some other ideas for the patron extra content. I need to sort it all out. My schedule's been ridiculous lately and everything, but we do want to make, you know, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons. You guys really do help the show keep going, and we want to, you know, definitely want to create extra content for you. It will happen. And we'll be getting back into a normal schedule with that stuff. So you can check out our Patreon over at patreon.com/scream_cast. We want to thank all of you who give us your hard-earned cash every month. It is very much appreciated and really does help keep things moving. Also, we're raising money for Tiffany Pace. As you all know, if you've been listening, her husband, Dustin Pace, passed away. Unexpectedly, we have a pin that he designed that we're working on getting out. in our store. It's called the Pumpkin Duddy Enamel Pin. All the money is going to go to Tiffany. We've sold about 50% of those. I'd love to sell out of all of these. So please check that out over at thescreamcast.com in our store. So check that out there. And we also have a link to the GoFundMe that we have set up for their family. So, all right, that's all the announcements I have. To Stephanie and BJ, do you have anything else to chime in?
No, thank you.
All right. Nope. Thank all of you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. Party's just begun.
Stop shop for all things geek for years, but there's a side to them many of you have never heard, the subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.